This podcast is proudly brought to you by Torched. Want to know how to grow your business with podcasting? Head to gettorched.com. That's GETTORCHT.com.
I'm Wayne Carey, and this is The Truth Hurts.
Well, we're back again, episode 7 of The Truth Hurts. I'm Ayrton Woolley, joined by the King, Wayne Carey. Good to see you, Wayne. I was a little bit worried you might not be in today after the busiest day of the year for you, Mother's Day.
You've got to run with that one. Billy Brownless and the Triple M boys will be wrapped if we run with the old Mother's Day. Yes, it was a very busy day. I hired a van, or I went over the Balti, I came back,
never gets old.
I had a long trip, booked a heap of flowers in the van and got the job done. So everyone was happy, but what a beautiful day, by the way, and happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. I know we're a day late, but it was just a gorgeous day to have Mother's Day. You could get out of the house, it was fantastic.
Cracking day, absolutely. I must say, despite it being a difficult day for you in some ways, you are looking...
It's not a difficult day. It's a great day.
It's not a difficult day. Well, I
just have to fill the...
You're a bit tired. You're a bit tired today.
Yeah, fill the car up.
You're looking very sharp, I must say.
Sharp. I've got a Nike T-shirt on.
Someone put this to me the other day, actually. They suggested to me that you actually look younger now than you did in your final year of footy.
Here we go.
I wanted to put
Are you serious?
Well, you're looking pretty good.
You know what it's called? By the way, you should do yourself a favour. And everyone knows I'm on the mosh, so that helped. I was thinning a fair
bit
before.
You're gone.
Well, when I retired, that was I was just about cooked in terms of that. And then everyone thinks I've had a bit of work done. Well, I certainly haven't had a facelift or anything like that. But
any Botox or
technology? Technology, and the other thing I like to say, and the other thing that I was way ahead of my time. I was using moisturiser back in the 90s, and to all the guys out there that, you know, I don't use moisturiser, I tell you what, and if you're a tradie, it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a lawyer, you're a tradie, whether you're a school teacher, use moisturiser from a young age. And if you do that, the results will be very good for you later in life.
So that was not a thing in the 90s, you're telling me?
Well, can't you tell? Like, I moisturiser morning and night. And like I said, a little bit of technology might have been used every now and then. But I remember Mick Martin came up to me and we're at Princess Park. Might have been the day that Plugger kicked 10 on him. But he came up and he looked at me and he said, what are you doing? I said, what do you mean, what am I doing? I said, I'm moisturising. He said, what moisturiser? I said, what's moisturiser? Well, what it is, Mick, is it's a lotion that you put on your skin. As I said before, it replenishes it. A bit dehydrated after a game. So I use it and it will make you look younger. And he goes, moisturiser. And I said, Mick, don't you worry about it. I said, it's not going to do you any favours. So don't start now. And there are some people out there that, you know, they're just too far gone. So
come on now.
So the key...
Apologies to Mick Martin. No. But you're mates with Mick, by the way.
We're great mates with Mick. But there are a lot of people out there that they've let it go too long. So you've got to get on top of it early. You can't just be a crinkled up chip or completely bald before you start to get onto this stuff.
Why'd you point at me then? Got the hat off today.
I noticed that. It's, anyway, you do yourself a favour and get some moisturiser.
Oh, thanks. I'll take that on board.
In saying that, by the way, and talking about age, Buddy Franklin, he's gone on a year too long, in my opinion. And
were you big on this last year?
I said this last year. In actual fact, I said it during the year, and then a few people jumped on. And in the end, he still played some handy footy, as we know. But he definitely doesn't play like he used to play. We know that Buddy's never been a great mark, but he's good below his knees. His speed gets to contest, uses the ball really well when he got up the ground. But that right now, he just looks like he's really lost a yard, and that athleticism and that flexibility that he once had. He looks like he's fallen off the cliff.
So this is not a product of the way Sydney's playing. Obviously, they're not playing as well as they had been previously, you think?
Well, at the end of the day, if the team's not playing great footy, and you're a forward. You're a product of that as well. So there's a little bit of that in it. But I just watch him.
Did you feel that in your final years? Did you?
Well, that's why I think I can speak about it. I knew that when I was at the Adelaide Crows, and when I was fit, I played some good footy at Adelaide. But when I knew that when there were certain marking contests, and I used to run back with a fly to the ball, or stand under the footy, or back into a pack. And when I was at Adelaide, I reckon in 2004, there were times where I ran back with a fly, and rather than commit and go for that footy, I went front and square. So my mind, my whole mindset had changed. And I remember more than a couple of times I sat in there, and I might have kicked a few goals, three or four goals, but just I didn't play the brand of footy that I played prior to that. And what I guess what your reputation's built off in the way that you played. So sat in front of the locker, the number two locker for Adelaide a number of times, and just said to myself, you're done. You're done.
Was this being spoken about outside as well, or this was more internal for you?
No, it was internal for me.
Yeah.
I retired from a neck injury halfway through 04, but Adelaide at the time, because Ayrsy had just been sacked, and Neil Craig had taken over, and they asked me to sign on. And clearly my neurosurgeon said, if you play on, you're a nitwit. But that's a different story. But so what I'm saying is I knew that I was done.
How hard's that decision? Because Buddy, obviously, last year, he, as you said, he played some decent footy at times, but you thought he'd probably had enough. Sydney were maybe still in the window chasing that, you know, that premiership. How do you make the right call? Because a lot of great players have got to make that call.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of players. Not too many players retire when they should. A lot of players go that year too long, I believe. And I think it's showing now that Buddy has gone a year too long. As I said, he's a champion of the game. He's going to be a legend of the game. He's kicked 1,000 goals. I love Dermot Brereton. He was my hero, by the way, as a kid, Dermy. But when Dermy said on the weekend that he felt sorry for Buddy, I don't feel sorry for Buddy. He's kicked over 1,000 goals. He's had one of the greatest careers the game has ever seen. And so I don't feel sorry for him. The fact that he's gone on for a year too long, I think Sydney, and I know Sydney have got a lot of injuries at the moment, so maybe they just don't have too many choices. But they've got to give more opportunity to other players. And I know at the moment they can't because a few of those are injured, but it's a watch this space. You don't like to see it. You don't like to see your superstars, champions, really battling the way he is, but he is really battling.
Another big talking point in the past week or so has been the AFL's investigation into Hawthorn and Alistair Clarkson, Chris Fagan. It's been dragging on. They haven't been able to tell their side of the story.
It's a ridiculous set of circumstances, isn't it? Just the way, I'm not talking about what has occurred, that's not ridiculous, but what I'm talking about is how long this has dragged.
Well, it was originally, the AFL said, going to be wrapped up by Christmas. Obviously, it's become a massive legal issue now, and this is what Alistair Clarkson had to say.
Yeah, there's the game is the victim of this. The game is shamed. Obviously, myself, Fakes, Jason, our families have been shamed. The Indigenous and First Nations families, they've been shamed. And there's one particular party out there that was the catalyst for all this. That haven't been investigated at all. Their governance and conduct in this whole thing, the Hawthorn Football Club, just shameful. Let's do an investigation on them and their practices and see how they go.
Yeah, elements of that are fair enough. And obviously there's a process, still a process to go through, albeit it's been a long one. And the only way I see a resolution for this is going to be in the courts. Because they're clearly not going to sit around and have a discussion. So it's going to be a judge, jury, whatever, to decide what occurs out of this. I think the fact that they can't sit around a table and have a discussion. But what I will say, and what concerned me about what Alistair Clarkson said there, is nothing to do with the case itself, but the fact that he gets so defensive and always, and he had a situation earlier this year with a journo that he got very defensive. He's always been that way, but he's more than willing to throw people under the bus and be really strong about it. Now, clearly here he's had a crack at his old footy club, which I find terribly sad. He's a legend of that footy club, irrespective. Doesn't matter what happens from here. He'll always be a legend of that footy club, and he's just he's just thrown them straight under the bus. And what it reminded me of, and this is the concerning thing for me, because what it reminded me of is when I made comments about Cyril Rioli, because I knew people, very good friends, and I had never went on radio and said something that I wasn't 100% sure about. So when I went on radio and said that I have on good authority, albeit I'm not a shock jock, I'm there to talk about footy, but it was a pretty big thing that I'd heard, and they people had said, I'm more than happy for you to talk about it. So I had on good authority that Cyril was going wanted to go home. He wanted to leave the footy club. And when I made those comments, Clarko had this to say.
Cyril's going back to the TV, I heard. Wayne Carey made that great announcement that, you know, we've coerced him into a five-year extension. 5 years. Do you reckon you'd be able to coerce someone into a five-year extension if you wanted to go back to the Tiwi? God, what a load of rubbish. Once again, no account. No account by a bloke who should know better than throw up bullshit about our players. Hold some of these people to account. Because it just the hysteria that it creates is just absolute rubbish. Particularly Carey, of all people. I've spoken about this before. He shouldn't make too many comments about stories about other players because we could just go to town on him.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Torched. Want to know how to grow your business with podcasting? Head to gettorched.com. That's GETTORCHT.com.
Okay, so you've got history with Alistair, haven't you? I mean, it's not the only time that you've maybe had a little stoush. You did, after that, speak to him, didn't you?
Yeah, Tim Watson organised a meeting for us to catch up. Mediation, that's what it was. And we went and caught up at Tim's house and sat down, and he apologised for those comments. But what it proves, and by the way, I was proven to be right, because he didn't last the 5 years and he did go back to the Tiwi Islands. And where was the accountability for Alistair Clarkson? I never got an apology from Alistair about being right.
Yep.
He apologised for making the comments in the media after it, but not then eventually about me actually being right. So the accountability and the defensive attitude that he gets himself into, surely being having the experience that he has now, and that's why the surprising comments about him having a crack at the Hawthorn Footy Club and throwing, you know, surely he's learnt by now not to be or not to have that defensive mindset when he's making these emotional conversations.
Does
because
he have
you
a
know
right?
what he does? Because you know what he does? And it's 101 psychology. It's, you know what, he reacts. He doesn't respond. Sometimes he's got to sit back, I think, and just listen to what someone's asking him and actually respond to it rather than react. Because when he reacts, I reckon he gets it wrong. And he's been wrong. He has been wrong, and he hasn't taken some accountability for being wrong in the last, you know, so many times. And there's just a few examples.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. I've got one question on that. And obviously that it'll play out in the courts and that sort of thing. Yep. But in this scenario with Alistair, he's had enormous reputational damage done to him without the right to really tell his side of the story because there has been confidentiality and all those sorts of things. Doesn't he have a right to defend his reputation?
Of course he has a right. I've had things written about me. And I don't want to sit here with poor me or whatever. I've had a squillion things written about me that are nowhere near the truth. And if you sit back and react to all of those things, then I tell you what, you live a bitter, angry sort of life. So I'm not suggesting, and clearly this is a big thing, and yes, his reputation to this point, and he hasn't had the opportunity to obviously answer the allegations against him and Fags. And I totally respect that, and he absolutely deserves that right. And unfortunately, in this world, when the paper or the news go with a story and have no real factual truth to it, and then your reputation's already damaged. The story's out there, as they say, a certain mud sticks, whether it's right or wrong, and then you never get the apology for them either. So just like Alistair, who finds it hard to apologise when he gets it wrong. The papers and the media are exactly the same. So you know, I think he'll be waiting for a long time before he gets an apology off anyone.
You're probably right there. The weekend's footy, it's been really open, hasn't it? How many teams do you think can actually win the flag? Because it feels like normally we would have two or three teams that, you know, are by far and away better than the competition, than the chasing pack of five or six. But this year, I don't know if we have those standout teams at the moment.
I think it's the most fascinating season we've had for a fair while. And for that, and we have got three teams down the bottom, North, West Coast and Hawthorn, who are clearly, you just chalk the win against those teams now. That's how disappointing they've been. And Hawthorn have shown glimpses. Obviously, North did early, and West Coast probably not so much. They have in a couple of games. They've put up a good fight and played some good footy. But they're the easy beats of the comp. And then you've got a massive list. I honestly believe Collingwood, Melbourne, the Cats, the Dogs, Brisbane, Port, Sydney, I don't think can now, because their injuries have already depleted their season, and some of them are long term injuries. So I'm not sure that they're going to be able to get there. They can reset very quickly, and I'm not saying finals. I'm saying grand, you know, premiership. And the Crows have a massive question mark. There's some of their footy this year. Let's not forget the Crows pretty much had Collingwood on toast there for a little bit.
Absolutely.
The Pies obviously got the decision in the end. So Crows are a massive question mark. Could a side, you know, come from where they've come and finish maybe, you know, maybe in the eight and give it a bit of a shake? Because they're exciting. When they play a really good brand, and when they they can score. Their forward line's really dangerous.
The way Jordan Dawson has stiffened up that midfield, because he's a big body now, playing as really one of the best players in the competition. I've watched him in the last few weeks. He's added something to that midfield. You know, it was, you know, Rory Sloane was maybe that inside player in the past, but Laird and these other guys maybe a bit smaller. But he's got grunt I didn't know he had.
Isn't it great to see players that have, you know, come as a defender and then moved into the midfield and doing what he's doing? And I think of guys like Crisp, obviously at Collingwood, that was a half back and came in, and now is a big mid, great running ability, uses it really well. So he's been a revelation. I love what the Crows are doing, and who would have thought that they would be where they're at now. So, but it's starting to sort itself out. I said last week the Blues can't play finals, and they can't. The Saints now, Ross has had them up, and they're playing. They're still being really competitive, St Kilda. But I think we understand that their list and also injuries. In saying that, King comes back maybe this week. If not this week, maybe next week. But what are they expecting out of him?
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Should we temper our expectations? You've had the same injury that he's had, a shoulder. In your initial phase of coming back, are you restricted?
Yes. Well, yes, you are. You need a whole, you need a whole pre-season basically to feel 100% confident. And he's had a fair bit of time. So you just hope that, for me, it was just all about movement. Was it being able to actually put my hands above my head? When I came back in '97, in that during that year, I basically came back with one and a half arms. I could only lift my arm halfway up, so I was very restricted. But you know, my understanding is he's ready to go. So you know, I think that's great for them. But you know, they're just starting to come back to the pack a little bit now, the Saints.
Player pay is back on the agenda as the AFL works through its collective bargaining agreement with the Players Association. Scott Pendlebury, one of the elder statesmen of the game, he had some really considered comments in terms of saying the players he believes are underpaid. He pointed to the NBA, where they get 51% of the game's revenue, to the AFL's 28%. He also pointed to the executive salaries, which he believes, you know, so heavily outweigh a lot of the player pay. You know, the executives, I think last year, were paid over $11 million on the AFL executive. So where do you sit on player pay? Because, I mean, 28% is not a huge number, and the players are the game, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and in all the professional sports around the world, they're the least. They take the least percentage out of all of those sports. So I've always said players are underpaid, and you know, you always get criticism of people saying, oh, how can you say that? Well, you say that because you have a limited time in the game, that's for sure. And the other thing The other thing that I will say is that the actual top money, so the highest money, so the Dusty Martin and the Buddy Franklin type money, and I think there's over 10 players now on $1 million. Isn't that was reported recently, or 10 or 11?
Yeah, I think
or
something like that.
Yep. Which is great, but you know, whether it be say $1 million or 1.4, I mean, my last year of the Kangaroos, 2001. I was on 1.4. So 2001. So the actual...
And that's worth a lot more money then. Well, salary cap was smaller.
So therefore, the top money has not gone up.
It's gone backwards.
It's gone... Well, yes, if you look at inflation.
In terms of relative
inflation,
terms.
In relative terms. Exactly right. So more players are on a million. More players are on 900 and 800. So so that middle money has come up, and there's a lot more players that are benefited from that. But I agree with him. I think that, you know, the best players in the comp should be getting more than what they're getting now, considering that, you know, people were getting that back then. Cooter, I think, was on over $1 million too back in the 90s. So
that's what I wondered. Was your, I mean, you're obviously a very dominant figure at North Melbourne. So do you think your scenario was maybe unique at that time, or do you think there were other players that were earning significant dollars?
No, you only believe what you read in the paper. So, because obviously our wages, you know, are private. And once again, other sports, maybe the wages should be there for everyone to see. I know that's a hot debate. But going back to your point, Paul Marsh and his executives have got a massive job with this new agreement. They've got to make sure that they get a bigger piece of the pie. There's no question about that. Because I really do think that the players who do put on the show do deserve more of that pie. No question about that. So massive job for Paul Marsh.
On a lighter note, a really unique situation when Geelong met Richmond on Friday night. The Tigers got the upset. Jack Riewoldt and Tom Hawkins after the game swapped jumpers. It's something that used to happen a long time ago. The one that comes to mind for me is Darryl Baldock, you know, wearing a Collingwood jumper when he got
the premiership.
Yeah, when he got
the only premiership they've ever won, and he had a Collingwood jumper on.
Oh no, I think that ended up changing because of, you know, sponsors, and you know, when teams are winning, they wanted to have their colours on. It got me thinking: has anyone ever asked you for your jumper at all at any stage?
They have, and from memory, I remember one in particular was when I represented Australia, captain of Australia in Ireland, and I swapped my jumper with their captain, who was also number 18, by the way. So we both swapped jumpers on Croke Park. And then Steve Silvani came up to me after a
Sauce.
Game. He wanted a pair of boots because he was a boot collector. So I gave Sauce a pair of boots. I think he might have given me a pair of his boots as well. Don't know where they are.
Think he did this with other players as well?
From memory, I think Sauce would have asked a few different players that he may have played on. And he collected boots. So I wonder, actually, we'll have to have a chat to him and see whether he's still got them. Because if he gave me a pair of his, I don't know where they are. A dog might have chewed. I've said this to you before. If you came into my place, you would not know that I played footy. Unlike a few teammates of mine, Anton.
Well, speaking of your former teammates, now we do want feedback for the show. We're going to set up a way that...
Yes, we're going to start answering some questions. So we want some questions sent in.
So we'll get that email sorted for the next program. But I have got some feedback already, some very direct feedback after we spoke about your pre-game song choice last week. One of your former teammates has told me some other songs that you used to not just play necessarily pre-game, you used to sing them just out loud in front of everyone.
Well, I do have a really good voice.
So Bruce Springsteen, and you just one line, I'm on fire, just the one line, George Michael Faith. Ooh.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. No, I'm very popular, and I didn't finish that sentence. I'm very popular at karaoke bars, and the reason why I'm that bad, people love me up there, and because I half think that I can sing and I'm bad, then people like it.
Well, I've got one more allegation for you. This
allegation. I don't like those.
This same teammate has suggested that you also sang the opposition theme song before the game, just out loud in the rooms, walking around the rooms.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Why? Well, whatever. I was very relaxed. I like to just and by the way, you wouldn't let Dennis Pagan hear you do it. Like, you had to do all this in private. Players now allowed to show a bit of personality and actually laugh. We weren't allowed to. We weren't allowed to laugh at all. In actual fact, if Dennis saw us laughing or, you know, having a bit of a, you know, where, or we even yawned, whereas yawning is, I think it's nervous energy. Yeah, nervous energy. So, yeah, no, you certainly couldn't be smiling at all. And even the day that we spoke about Mick earlier, the day that Mick had fake tan on, Mickey Martin put fake tan on before we played Sydney Swans, and he was playing against the great Tony Lockett with fake tan.
What, why?
With fake tan.
I haven't heard this. What's this?
And then when the trainer came out and he, you know, a hot day and he's wiping off and all the fake tan was coming off on the towels. So as you can imagine, Plugger had a little bit of fun around that later. But, yeah, anyway, I know I digress there a little bit. But, yes,
yeah, good
it was about having fun. It's about having fun. So that's what kept me relaxed.
Well, we've certainly had fun again today. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you again next week.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Torched. Want to know how to grow your business with podcasting? Head to gettorched.com. That's GETTORCHT.com.